Please pray with me. Living One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. For you are the one who guides us along the path of life, who teaches us mercy, truth, and wisdom and love. Amen. My tendency is to complete a task and then find another one. And then another one. It is maybe my firstborn nature. It is hard for me to rest. It's hard for me to let go. I was taught that work comes before play. And unfortunately, many times that means that play does not happen. Therefore, it's hard to let go and calm the mind and still the soul. I like to think that I'm a contemplative soul, and yet my practice shows that I am not. To sit still for 10 minutes is very, very difficult, let alone try 20 or 30 in prayer and meditation. I twitch too much. I think God has given us an answer to our busyness. It's called the Sabbath. It's the antidote to our tendency to believe that it's all up to us. It's all up to our addiction to action. God rested on the seventh day, the Bible tells us, and the Abrahamic faiths have taken that to heart. As core about what it means to be a creation and not a creator, or not the creator. My wife and I have long taken one day a week as a Sabbath. It depends which day it is, depending on our schedules. But for the last several years, our pattern is to take Thursday night through Friday evening as our Sabbath, where we don't do work, either what we're paid to do or other kinds of work. Friday is, we may go for a long walk or a hike, or we may just sit and talk to each other to catch up. We may read. We might write, we might go see a movie, we might sleep in, or all of the above, or none of them. For me, long walks or hikes are the best. That's when I really see what is around me, the sky, the flowers, the wind making patterns in the long grass, the birds, the clouds, even those pesky insects. Along the way, at some point, I let go of the day-to-day must-do list and the resulting anxiety about what has not yet been done and what I have done, but not quite the way I wanted to do it. I'm a perfectionist as well. And after a while, if I'm really paying attention to being present in that Sabbath, in that day of recreation, I'm able to drop into a different state of being, more relaxed, less anxious, more open to what exists beyond my own little circle of concerns and responsibilities and plans and hopes, all that stuff. Connection with larger reality. That's why hilltops are so important to me. I can see a long ways. And I'm drawn beyond my little circle, my little self, toward the larger creation, towards the lives of other people, the animals and nature of the life of the world that stretches out before me. Redwood trees, the ocean, other symbols of eternity speak to me and remind me of God, of the largeness and capability of the Creator, and of my smallness and my over-anxiety about fixing things and doing things. During this time, I'm more likely to access my creative self. And insights and answers and other things just pop out of nowhere. I'm paying attention over here and suddenly I know the answer to something I've been struggling with all week. And so a day of Sabbath for me entered into as fully as possible serves to recreate me, rejuvenate me, re-energize me, so that the next day I can go back to my usual life. Hopefully a little changed. Hopefully. Letting go of the usual things to talk about during that day forces me to talk about other things, and perhaps even talk less than I usually do. Deeper stuff than the usual fare. So over the last week, with these scriptures in mind, with the theme of rest in mind, I've tried to bring rest or Sabbath into my body, into my daily life, while working, while driving, while doing errands, eating, whatever. I have to admit my ability to do this is not wonderful. It's not great. But it's made a difference. I still get angry and upset over things that shouldn't make me angry and upset, but at least I can say, aha, I know what I'm doing and why. I find life less exhausting because I relax my body more often. I use less energy. I breathe a little deeper. And I'm less likely to give way to anxiety over something that was really important. I'd forgotten it, and I just remembered it. So what gave rise to this practice was the text for this morning. I find that King David and I are soulmates, at least in one respect, that we have the tendency to finish one project and just jump to another. He had just defeated his enemies, the house of Saul, the previous king, the kings around. He had made peace with the countries around him. The king of Lebanon had just built him a wonderful palace to live in out of a gesture of friendship and respect. And David had just moved in. And what does David do? I've got to build a temple. No small undertaking. Good intentions, wrong timing, wrong guy. The prophet Nathan told him, go ahead, do it. And then Nathan has the dream. No, God says, tell David to not do that. That's not his job. That's not his use in the world. That's not his calling. I have something else for him to do. A descendant of his, a child of his, will build that temple, but not David. And Nathan has to go and say, sorry, I'm the prophet, and I made a mistake, and that happens, and you're not going to build that temple. Sometimes we think we have to do things, and actually we're not the right person, or it's not the right time. But despite the difficulty this must have caused David, what? I can't keep busy? What am I going to do with myself? He immediately, if you keep reading the story, he goes to the place of worship and he sits before the Lord and he prays this beautiful prayer of letting go, of allowing God to be God and of him just to be him. And acknowledging God's purposes, God's uses for him in the world. However, if you were to keep reading and watch what David does, you'll find that at some point, again, he runs out of things to do, and he gets bored. And for David, that's very dangerous. Because he looks over the parapet of the castle, of his palace. He's on the roof, and he looks down, and he sees who?
Bathsheba.
Bathsheba. Not Bathsheba's fault. David's bored. And he enters into an escapade, which results in much pain for everyone concerned. So David has trouble resting. He has trouble being in a state of Sabbath, of rejuvenation, of saying, I have nothing I have to do, and isn't that great? I can just be. I can just rest. I can let other people work. It's their turn. And then in the Mark text, we find the disciples and Jesus trying to get some rest from their labors, and they cannot find such a place. Jesus says, let's go on the boat, let's go over to this remote place, and there we'll have time to rest. Well, people find out about it. And there's a huge crowd waiting for them when they get out of the boat. It's like, oh, here they are again. And they are needy, this crowd. They are directionless. They are seeking insight and healing. And if it were me, I might groan inwardly, smile, and run the other way. I've had enough. I need rest. But this is Jesus we're talking about. And he has deep compassion for those people that is deeper than his need for rest and recreation. And he ministers to that crowd. It says 5,000 men. Add in the families, you end up with 15,000 easily. And his disciples kind of go along going, we don't have enough. We aren't enough. What are we going to do about this? And they end up feeding all of them. Remember that story? And later, when they leave that place and go to Gennesaret, again, they end up doing ministry rather than resting. There is no pause for them. They have to keep going. But I began thinking about that and then my experience over the last week, and I would guess they found a way to rest in the midst of their activities. If I can do it, surely they thought of it. Certainly they were driven deeper into an attitude of dependence upon God for strength and wisdom and energy and a sense of breath and spirit and relaxation. And for the ability to truly be there, to really see the people and who they were and what they needed. I think that can be us, you and me. Because sometimes there is no breathing room. We've finished one project and we must go on to the next and to the next. And we gasp for breath. And we say, what does my faith mean anyway in the midst of this unceasing wheel of work and responsibility and pressure? The demands of school and work and people's hurts and needs and chores and whatever else pops up, it's never ending. And that's, I think, when we need to remember that God is in the midst, already there, before we get there, before we think about God's presence. It is not all up to us and our wisdom and our reserves of energy and our good intentions and our lifelong skills and whatever else we can think of. And we remember that we are like the 15,000 waiting for Jesus and his disciples. We too are needy. We are hungry and thirsty. We are empty. We are depending on a power larger than us and wiser than us and more loving than us to fill us, to meet us, to give us what we need. And we remember we are like the people of Gennesaret who rush around bringing the sick into Jesus' presence saying, heal this one. Oh, and by the way, there's that one too. Because we bring our hunger, our illness, our pain, our frustration to the feet of the Lord, and he reaches out and he touches us. And he gives us what we need in the moment. And we can breathe a little deeper and see a little more clearly and love just a little more. And all this is important and good and right. And we are also told in the scriptures that the kind of rest, the kind of Sabbath that God desires for us goes even deeper. That the kind of Sabbath that God wishes us to keep consists of seeking justice for others. And we don't want to hear that. An end to poverty, to prejudice, to corruption. Why? Because God's very nature is that of wisdom and love, of justice and compassion, of concern for those who are hungering and thirsting both materially and spiritually. And I think that God's desire for humankind is that all are able to rest. All are able to take a deep breath, to recreate, to take a Sabbath, to experience bone deep peace. My thoughts about rest this week collides with another reality. I went online and there was the photo of Elizabeth Eckford, September 4, 1957, Little Rock, Arkansas. One of the Little Rock Nine. We tried to desegregate Central High. You've seen that photo of this one African-American girl in her pretty dress and dark lit shades, holding her textbooks, trying to get into that school. And a white, and I would dare say mostly Christian mob at her heels, screaming at her. And she went to the gates of that school and she was turned back by the National Guard, and she had to go back home with that mob on her heels. And she had to get on a bus, and she had to walk back home. And I looked at that photo and read that story, and I thought, how did she rest? What rest was there for her in that moment? That photo shows her apprehension and also a dignity, a calmness. She was terrified. And yet something kept her going, step by step, surrounded by white people who couldn't bear her presence, who knew what she was about and would have lynched her if they could have. Except there were photographers around and news people. Somewhere online, Vanity Fair, I guess, it's online, you can find it. All you have to do is Google her name, Elizabeth Eckford. And there's an account written about that morning, 50 years later, 2007. This is what happened earlier that morning at her home. After making sure everyone looked right and had their pencils and notebooks and lunch money, Mrs. Eckford gathered her children around her, and together they read aloud the 27th Psalm. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should arise against me, in this will I be confident. And after hearing that psalm, Elizabeth left the house, walked down to the bus, and boarded it on her way to school. That's no doubt what gave her the courage and strength to walk through that mob, both toward the school and then back away from it. Somewhere, and I believe that psalm had to help her, she found her rest, her place of inner security, her place of peace, as ragged and as chaotic as it was. I want to tell you a second story about a reporter who asked a farmer if he could reveal the secret of his corn, which won the contest of the best product year after year. The farmer confessed that it was due to the fact that he shared his seed with his neighbors. Why do you share your best corn seed with your neighbors if you also enter in the same contest together year after year? Asked the reporter. Well, you will see, sir, said the farmer. The wind carries the pollen of the ripe maize from one crop to the other. If my neighbors cultivate an inferior quality corn, the cross-pollination would constantly degrade the quality of mine. If I am going to sow good corn, I should help my neighbor to do it also. So here we have King David and Jesus' disciples and Elizabeth Eckford and Rosa Parks and all manner of people and you and me. And we all long for rest. We all long for internal peace in the midst of life's storms and busyness and attempts to claim our rightful place. May you and I find it this week. in the company of many others who are also hungering and thirsting, desperately sometimes, for the same thing. And may you and I be able to give out of our own small, meager store of peace, just as the disciples learned to give out of that small, meager store of fish and bread that Jesus broke and gave to the 15,000, and it was enough, and 12 baskets left over. I think you and I can help to feed, if we're willing, a multitude. May it be so.